Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI assures his prayers for the victims of violence and for those populations who find themselves in dangerous circumstances due to social uprisings. The bishops of Southern Africa call on the SADC and on the international community to closely watch happenings in Zimbabwe. And we hear more about the situation in Zimbabwe through different eyes and different perspectives, thanks to the witness of people who know the country well. Pope Benedict XVI says he is following with great apprehension the tensions that in these days have arisen in the various countries of Africa and Asia. Speaking on Sunday before praying the Angelus with those gathered in St. Peter's Square, the Pope mentioned Libya in particular, where he said the recent conflicts have caused numerous deaths and a growing humanitarian crisis. Lydia O'Kane reports.
Pope Benedict on Sunday lamented the tense situation in several African and Asian countries, saying he was following events with apprehension.
Seguo continuamente e con grande apprensione le tensioni.
In particular, the Holy Father appealed for the victims of the ongoing fighting in Libya between rebels and forces loyal to Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. The Pope said, "My heartfelt thoughts go out to Libya, where recent clashes have caused many deaths and a growing humanitarian crisis." He added that he was offering his prayers and his closeness to all the victims and to those who find themselves in situations of anguish, and he called for aid and help for the stricken populations.
Mentre invoca assistenza e soccorso per le popolazioni colpite.
The Pope's attention also turned to Pakistan and the recent assassination of the Catholic Minister for Minorities, Shahbaz Bhatti, who was shot and killed for opposing harsh blasphemy laws in the country.
Chiedo al Signore Gesù che il commovente sacrificio
Pope Benedict, who had met the minister at the Vatican last year, said he hoped that Mr. Bhatti's moving sacrifice would wake up consciences to find the courage to work for religious freedom and equal dignity for all in Pakistan. The Holy Father was speaking following the Angelus on Sunday in St. Peter's Square, where he also underlined the need for people to build their lives not on sand, but on a solid basis. Referring to Sunday's Gospel, the Pope said that Christ is the rock of our life. He is the eternal and definitive Word, which makes us not fear adversity, difficulty, or hardship. Pope Benedict continued by saying that the sands of power, success, and money were not the way to find happiness or stability.
May we build up our future upon the solid foundation of the Gospel of Jesus and find fulfillment and happiness and eternal salvation.
Before greeting pilgrims in various languages, including English, the Holy Father urged people to provide some space for the Word of God. It is a precious form of help, he said, to protect yourself against the superficial activism that can satisfy your pride for a time, but which in the end leaves you empty and unsatisfied. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. Southern African bishops are expressing their fear that prematurely held elections in Zimbabwe could bring more suffering upon the people of the nation. In a statement addressed to the president of the Southern African Development Community, the Catholic bishops of Imbisa, which is the interregional meeting of the bishops of Southern Africa, lay out a series of concerns and a very particular plea to the political leaders of the SADC region and to the international community. I spoke to the president of Imbisa, Bishop Frank Nubuasa, who told me that the plea comes at a critical time in the life of the Zimbabwean nation.
It's been many years that Imbisa and the bishops of Southern Africa have been concerned about the situation in Zimbabwe. I see you have addressed a letter to the president of the South African Development Community asking to closely watch the happenings in Zimbabwe, particularly with reference to the possibility of an election. Why have you decided to take this step?
The reports we were getting from people on the ground in Zimbabwe indicated that people are being intimidated wherever they are, and that people did not feel free to take part in political activities like gatherings and having meetings. And that people felt that they were being watched, wherever they went and whatever they did. So the freedom of expression, freedom of assembly was not being felt by people on the ground. And coupled with that was the news which the president of Zimbabwe was anticipating to have elections this year. And we were concerned because there is no constitution. They are still working on the constitution. It's not yet completed. And we would have liked to see the constitution completed and a referendum taking place to confirm the constitution as a national document of law before thinking of elections. So when we met as bishops, that was our concern. So we thought we would address a letter to the president of Southern African Coordinating Community, SADC, who at present is a bishop, is a president of the Republic of Namibia.
Exactly. What are you asking the SADC to do?
Okay, we are asking the Southern African Development Community to encourage the parties concerned in Zimbabwe to complete the work on the constitution and make sure that the field is level and fair for all the people who want to participate in the elections. Secondly, to protect our people who are mostly the victims in the country. The leaders are not victimized by nobody, but it's the ordinary person who is victimized.
I understand that the president of Zimbabwe is anticipating these elections, as you yourself said. Why do you think he is interested in doing this?
Well, he thinks that the government of national unity is a marriage of inconvenience. So he would like to go to the electorate to get legitimacy to be able to rule by himself and his party alone. He would like to break that marriage. Even though he's a Catholic, he doesn't know that divorces are not allowed.
I think there are a lot of things that he's chosen to forget.
Yes. According to reports, he has said that it's a marriage of inconvenience and he wants to get out of it.
I've read reports that there are fears that the run-up to this coming election could be even more violent than the last one, which was terrible in 2008.
That is a fear of people. Nobody can foresee the kind of violence which would take part. But it's a fear of people that the ruling party is organizing, is mobilizing its youth, and they are being empowered with ideological slogans and all sorts of things. So the fear is that the violence which will be unleashed on people will be worse than before.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
No, thank you, Linda. I just want to say that we as church are concerned about the situation in Zimbabwe because there are so many refugees in South Africa, some in Botswana. A couple of them have been to Zambia and Mozambique. So because of the instability in one particular country, the neighboring countries are being affected. And we would like our people to live in peace and harmony. So we call upon the president of Zimbabwe to work for the common good and put his partisan politics behind him and see that everybody in his country is looked after and cared for. People are still hungry. People cannot afford medical care because of the situation there. The dollarization of the economy makes it very difficult for people in the rural areas to be able to cope.
It is no secret that Zimbabwe is a nation particularly close to my heart. I speak of the pain of its people whenever it's possible. And that's not very often, because the situation there and the lack of freedom of speech is such that it can be dangerous for Zimbabweans or for their families who still live there to speak with criticism of the government. However, it does happen that I come across someone who knows the country well, and I never neglect to ask for an opinion, maybe even for a few words of hope. Not long ago, I had the privilege to interview the director of the Jesuit Refugee Service, Father Peter Balaise. We were, in fact, talking about the World Day for Refugees and Migrants, which is marked in January. But during that interview, Father Balaise let slip that he had spent quite some time in Zimbabwe, starting in the 80s, just 4 years after liberation hero Robert Mugabe had been elected Prime Minister.
I lived from 84 to 99 in Zimbabwe. I worked as regional director in Southern Africa for GRS, and I was always happy to come back to Zimbabwe, to the regional office, when I spent time in war-torn Angola. We worked there, and Zimbabwe was in Zimbabwe. And I could not imagine that 10 years down the line, it is sending refugees out, and it has become what it is, yeah? And it's very frustrating.
I offered my opinion that as the dictatorship has become more and more violent and the people more and more oppressed, there must be some particular trait within them that makes them hold on to peace at a very high cost.
People have gone also through a war, and you find in every society some percent of people who are willing to exercise violence. Yes. Because the Zimbabweans know what the war is. They don't want any more the war. They wait till he dies. Yeah? And that's better. That's why I'm hopeful about Zimbabwe. Some will come back. They are well-trained people. They had very good education. It was a great time in the 80s and the 90s. But we also overlooked some of the traits in the governance of that president which were violent. We also overlooked that the country did not go to confession. I'm now very Catholic. A country, a human society, and I speak here as a German from our own background, that needs to go to confession. We need to deal with the past. We need to look at it. It was an easy, a cheap reconciliation. You know, it was somehow a good message, but still one needs to deal with it. They didn't sit down. That's why the white farmers or the white community never understood why the people were struggling for their land, why they wanted the land back in the liberation war, why they felt so deeply hurt. And there was never an official apology. Say, sorry, that apology could have been translated in a very concrete action. Okay, let's share some of the land, you know, still keep the agricultural sector well functioning and so on. But the winning party also never admitted the atrocities they also committed. War is war. So that continued. So that's why, you know, that's for me my interpretation, reflection, many written books written about the president there, Mugabe and so on, and why, and he was such a nice guy. No, war, violence was always there. Mandela came out of prison as a very integral, reconciled person. And that integrity of one person could hold together a whole nation. It's still the symbol for South Africa with all their problems. Mugabe came out of prison and opted for the war in 1975. Recall history a bit. Yeah? And the war heated up in 77. He opted for the war. The Rhodesians wanted kind of a bit of an interim solution, not the best one, but somehow. But it was option for war. And that we still have now, that violence there. But people overcome it by passivity. They wait till he dies.
Do you think, I asked Father Peter Balaise, it is an African way of dealing with things?
No, I don't know. That people are more patient, but also I think there's a lesson of what nations learn, at least learn for some time, then forget again. I'm somehow hopeful about the Sudan. Maybe I'm naive now, but people had enough of that war. They had enough. Do you really think the South Sudanese want to go back again to sacrifice their young people? And I'm not sure. In Ivory Coast, do you think they want I don't think that the people want that. The politicians, the ones for power, and they will. But you also need people to go along with it. And once when people say we don't want that anymore, and whatever, you know, I'm more hopeful, because out of that experience there comes a point. It's enough of fighting and this, you know, division. People are tired. They want to live, and that's. Bit also hope which I have and for that. And that's the same thing for Zimbabwe. That will recover slowly, but it will recover faster than if Zimbabwe would have gone for a violent solution to make a violent change, they would have more difficulties. Because the war would be worse. The war would be worse.
Someone else I had the chance to speak to about the plight of Zimbabwe is in fact connected to Father Peter Balese, because she works in the very organisation that he heads. I met her just a couple of weeks ago as she was here in Rome for a meeting. Her name is Robin Leslie, and she is Regional Advocacy and Communications Officer for the Jesuit Refugee Service in Southern Africa. I spoke to her at length about the many projects she is involved in, as JRS Southern Africa extends its services to 6 different countries in the region. And as I mentioned earlier, we also had the chance to talk about a Zimbabwean reality that I had never even heard existed. You were saying earlier that you have a refugee camp in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
And I nearly fell off my chair.
Who would seek refuge in a country where most people don't even have the basics?
Yes.
Can you tell us about this camp?
The Zimbabwean government has a refugee camp called Tongagara. And this camp is located quite close to the Mozambican border, south of a town called Matari. It's quite difficult to get to. The roads are not tarred. It's about, I would say, approximately 600 to 800 kilometers from Harare city center. It's a quite isolated camp. The majority of the population in Tongagara are French-speaking refugees from Grand Lac region, DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, Burundi.
Do they know that the camp is there? I mean, how do they get channeled into such a remote place?
There's a lot that we still need to find out about mapping how and where refugees move in our region. There's very complex social networks in place that pass information that we're actually not aware of. So I couldn't tell you how they find out about Tongagara. I think for a lot of people, they just pack up and run, and the first place they get to that will provide them with shelter, they'll stay. For instance, from the Grand Lakes region, Tanzania and Kenya have become saturated with Sudanese and Somali refugees. I think Tanzania and Malawi also closed one of their refugee camps. So it's a case of almost finding a place in a very narrow political space.
Crossing the borders? Is it easy to cross into Zimbabwe?
I think it depends on which border point you use. South African and sub-Saharan countries are big. The borders are porous, particularly borders that are rivers, such as the South Africa-Zimbabwe mm-hmm. border. So I think getting in is perhaps not the trickiest. I really couldn't say. The South Africa-Zimbabwe border has become very treacherous, mainly due to thugs and gangs that prey on people who are trying to move.
And taking with them all that they can, I imagine.
Absolutely. And they'll often bribe people and say, I can provide you with a safe crossing. And in fact, they just take everything that they've got. They're called the Magumaguma on the South Africa-Zimbabwe border. But it's not my understanding that there's these sort of treacherous issues on other borders. I imagine people cross as they crossed from the Horn all the way down, which is either through bribery or finding a game park that's a border, mm-hmm. crawling through some barbed wire. It can be as basic as that.
You were saying earlier that many children make up the population at the camp.
Absolutely. There's a lot of families that arrive, a lot with young children and with teenagers. And Zimbabwe, in fact, a lot of sub-Saharan legislation at the moment decrees that if you have a refugee camp, you must stay in it as a refugee. There's no freedom of movement. There's no right to work. So what we have in Zimbabwe is a situation where we have a large population of bored people, people with no opportunities, completely isolated from urban areas, who are basically told to sit and wait the war out, if war is what they've fled from, or sit and wait their persecution out. And however long that takes, that's your, it's almost like a sentence.
What kind of community does that develop into?
A community very frustrated, a community very bored, a community very much focused on getting out, in inverted commas. There's, JRS runs a program where we offer a 3-year study visa for teenagers who want to pursue vocational training in Harare, and the competition for that is huge. So we have teenagers, but once again, the problem simply returns with them because they have a 3-year visa, and once that's expired, they have to leave Harare and return to Tongagara. So in one sense, that's almost worse because kids have been given an opportunity to live in an urban area where there's, you know, stimulation, where there's potential for personal development, and then they're sent back to what is essentially an empty space. So Tongagara is a problem in terms of occupation. We do income generation activities there, though. So if you visited Tongagara, you'd walk down the main street and you'd see a variety of tuck shops, hair salons. We sponsored one refugee to make his own bread oven, so he bakes fresh rolls. And you know, those are the good stories. Those are the stories.
So have you, JRS, got a team out there?
What we have is two sisters who work full-time for us in the camp, and our country director visits about once a month. And we're considering getting someone full-time to work with our project there.
What about this huge influx we hear of Zimbabwean refugees who come into South Africa? What scenario can they expect?
As a Zimbabwe fleeing into South Africa, it's a tough life. First of all, you have to cross the border, which is difficult due to simply natural dangers. If you're crossing the river, there's crocodiles. If you're crossing through barbed wire, there's thieves and thugs that are sitting waiting for you to steal whatever you've brought with you. The South African border police and the Zimbabwean border police are not ready to welcome you as a refugee to South Africa from Zimbabwe. So there's a whole range of dangers associated just with getting in. Once you're in, you somehow have to find your way to a refugee reception center, accept your asylum seeker slip, which needs to be renewed every 3 months.
So, which is automatic?
Yes. Once you apply to refugee, you go to your refugee reception center, and there's one in Limpopo province, which is the province that borders Zimbabwe. And they also,
so all Zimbabweans can apply for
all Zimbabweans, asylum, no matter what your nationality status is, you can apply for asylum status in South Africa. Once you've made your application, you then get a piece of paper which says that you're an asylum seeker and allows you to stay in the country. But this permit must be renewed every 3 months. And one of the problems associated with this permit that have been reported in South Africa is that you get fined R2,500 for a late renewal of this permit. But queues and associated bureaucracy with the Department of Home Affairs has resulted in these permits being renewed late. And since refugees aren't allowed, asylum seekers aren't allowed to work, they then fined R2,500, which they can't pay, so their permit gets confiscated. And so they're completely vulnerable with absolutely no papers whatsoever and liable to deportation, which is a huge problem because a lot of them have valid asylum seeker causes.
A lot of Zimbabweans in particular, I think, are people with qualifications who could contribute much to society.
Absolutely. And I think the South African government's made a really positive step in recognizing this. One of their projects for last year was called the Zimbabwe Regularization Project. And what this was aimed at was trying to deal with the huge caseload of Zimbabweans coming in and claiming asylum in South Africa, or simply coming in and being undocumented and working illegally. So the South African government took a really positive step and said, what we're going to do is provide visas, 4-year visas, work visas, business visas, and study visas. And there were a range of criteria that you had to meet as a Zimbabwean to apply for these visas. A really positive step that would allow a lot of people to legalize their status, contribute to the economy, pay tax. These are all positive steps. Unfortunately, the implementation of this project has been troubled from the start. The criteria are tricky because a lot of the documentation required from the Zimbabwean side, you know, you need a birth certificate mm-hmm. or a Zimbabwe passport, and these things are expensive, they're difficult to get hold of. And the original time frame suggested by the Department of Home Affairs was unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So it resulted in massive queues, a lot of panic, and while the regulations are really helpful, they also don't address the issue of destitute or impoverished undocumented people living in South Africa. The regulations are designed to help people who have already got a job for a start, mm-hmm. who can prove that they were in the country from before May 2010, who already own small businesses that simply need a legalization process to happen. It doesn't help poor, underaged, destitute, orphans, widows, disabled, who are often really the vulnerable people that need assistance. So, you know, we really, as JRA South Africa, we applaud the government for this step. We really are thrilled. But we'd like to see more attention to the people who really need our help the most.
Yes, as the Bishop's letter points out, this Southern African situation cries out for a solution that respects human dignity and social justice. So this, they reiterate, is our plea, that SADC be the agent that brings about this urgently needed recovery of Zimbabwe. This would bring with it the long-awaited development and integration of the region. It would bring healing, peace and prosperity to the suffering of the people of Zimbabwe. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.